Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Asia Pacific stocks are trading mixed this morning, with Japan leading the way up by 0.05%. Australia is slightly underwater, down by 0.21%. And Korea is down by 0.45%. Now, this comes against the backdrop of Wall Street's sell-off overnight on fears that Federal Reserve may continue tightening until it tips the economy into a recession. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 1.4% to finish off at 33,947 points. The S&P 500 slumped 1.79% to settle at 3,998 points. And the Nasdaq Composite slid 1.93% to end the session off at 11,239. So to help us out with today's latest market movements and stories making headlines, let's welcome on the show Ryan Huang. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning,
how are you doing?
And doing great. How about you?
Not too bad myself, Ryan. Now, Ryan, yesterday marked a negative start to the trading week as investors struggled to digest the release of the November ISM services data, which basically looks at the purchasing level of manufacturers as a gauge of the health of the broader economy. So what exactly did this recent ISM data signal about the state of the economy?
Yeah, last night we saw Wall Street numbers are down, and that followed actually a positive session across Asia because of the optimism around China's reopening. But last night it was really driven by the US economic data. And like you pointed out, we had a round of hotter than expected data coming through. And we are looking at the manufacturing PMIs by the ISM coming in at 56.5. Mm. That is hotter than expected. Than the expectations of 53.4 and higher than the prior month's reading of 54.4. So all in, it's a reflection of how hot and robust the US labor market is still. And that's on top of the earlier indications of last Friday's wage growth report, as well as the non-farm payrolls that came in at a reading of 263,000, above the forecast of 200,000, and showing elevated signs of the labor market. And of course, inflationary pressures, when you have employers still trying to hire so many people, that will mean they'll be competing with raising wages. And that's going to mean inflationary pressures as they pass on these costs potentially to consumers.
Mm. All right, Ryan, then market observers are still largely expecting a 50 basis point increase to interest rates at the Fed's December meeting. That's happening, if I'm not wrong, next week. So taking into consideration the release of the payrolls report last week and the recent ISM services data, do you think that is still possible?
That is definitely still possible. And we've already had four jumbo size rate hikes in the past four meetings at 75 basis points. So going into December, consensus forecast is for 50. And this is what has been communicated by many of the Fed speakers, that they might need to moderate or have the allowance to moderate with the signals from some fronts. And what we can look out for instead is perhaps for these rates to stay elevated for longer. In other words, coming down might not be anytime soon, so we could be in for longer rather than higher. So that's what I think markets could be looking out for, any commentary around how these rates might need to stay there for quite some time. And we've heard from Fed Chair Jerome Powell that he is quite data dependent. He's going to be looking out for the numbers, and that will take some time for numbers to come in and to form a chart or trajectory of sorts to inform his decision. So he doesn't want to overcommit too much as well. So that's going to be part of the equation. So 50 basis points, still quite possible. And we are going to see that December meeting sometime next Thursday morning.
Right. And yes, since what you've mentioned as well, Powell also said the terminal rate, or the point at which the Fed stopped raising, is likely will need to be somewhat higher than indicated at the September meeting. So that's something that we'll be taking a close look on. Let's now move on to a company that's making headlines, and that's Foxconn. Now, the world's largest contract electronics maker reported a sharp drop in November revenue yesterday, and it said that revenue last month was down more than 29% versus October, over 11% lower compared to November of last year. What happened here, Ryan? I mean, what kind of impact do you see this having on Apple?
Yeah, not a surprise if you've been following the headlines around the factory space in China. A lot of the disruptions being affected by the restrictions in the past few months. We've seen how pictures and videos of employees at some of these plants have been clashing with security forces. So that has been boiling over, and now many of these workers have left these plants. Mm. And this is going to be a challenge for many of these factories to cope with as they head into the holiday season. So something that's going to be weighing on the growth targets for many of these companies. And Foxconn, of course, is a huge Apple maker.
Mm.
We've seen estimates of around 6 million iPhones being affected. So that is going to be a big dent for Apple as well as the other Apple ecosystem vendors. So it's going to be quite a bit of trouble for anyone who's making stuff in China until there's further clarity on reopening measures.
Are you a big Apple fan, Ryan?
Not quite.
So you won't make up that 6 million losses?
No. Are you, Dan?
Oh, well, I would say I'm okay with my old Apple.
No. Okay, so I know what to get you for Christmas.
All right, let's look forward to that. All right, Ryan, now let's move on. Speaking of iPhones, the economic unrest we're seeing in China is accelerating Apple's plans to shift some of its production outside of China.
Mm.
And word has been going around that the iPhone maker is now considering moving parts of its iPad production to India, although no concrete plans have been made yet. First off, why India? And what does this mean for the company going forward?
Yeah, it's quite natural expectation for some of these companies to look towards India because they have the infrastructure in place and they also have many existing operations in India as well. So that is quite a logical step for them to look towards India as a way to diversify away from China because as we've discussed many times, China has had a few hiccups, not just on the COVID-19 restrictions, but also on trade disputes.
Mm.
So you've got a lot of things playing out geopolitically that is just making a lot of companies think twice about how much they want to depend on Chinese facilities. So India is one of them, cost-wise mm-hmm. and also infrastructure-wise. It does make sense. So I think more companies will be joining Apple and looking towards India and many other places, maybe Indonesia as well,
right,
as alternative options.
Right, and speaking of which, do you think Apple would be caught in the middle of the growing tensions between India and China over territorial disputes?
It's quite tough to call how this plays out. Like we've seen in many of the tech disputes, it does often involve many, in a way, collateral damage in terms of companies being affected because they typically bear the brunt of the decisions by policymakers.
Mm.
The biggest one, of course, we've seen in past years has been Boeing, the US airplane maker. So many of these tensions have spilled over into the corporate space. So tech companies being so high profile and being so front-facing and serving so many consumers, they typically will bear the brunt of any policy backlash.
Right, and that's something that remains to be seen, so we'll be keeping a close eye on that as well. Now, moving on, Ryan, are you a Pepsi or a Coke person?
Depends on the day. So
oh,
my mood is sometimes Pepsi, sometimes Coke.
Can you actually tell the difference, though?
I can.
Really?
It's a different sweetness. Ah. I'm not sure how else to describe it, but there is a different type of sweetness profile to each soda. Can you tell the difference?
Not really. I've been trying to for years to find a difference, but if I had to choose one, I suppose I'll go with Coke.
So just go for the cheaper one.
Yeah, I would go for the cheaper one, that's for sure. And now it looks like Pepsi is next in line to lay off workers, and the company is making plans to eliminate hundreds of corporate jobs in North America. And while Pepsi had initially raised its full-year revenue forecast in October after higher prices boosted its sales, why are they proceeding with this layoff plan, Ryan?
Yeah, that's the thing. Higher prices. Not everyone's keen to pay higher prices. And PepsiCo, even though the latest results were higher, it was because of those higher prices offsetting the drop in volume. So I think PepsiCo is looking a bit conservative, expecting volumes to stay that way and not expecting everyone to continue to pay high prices. So that's something they are weighing, and perhaps they can also see from their own back end that maybe the costs and expenses are starting to rise and to possibly eat up some of these margins, which will not make it feasible for them to have that many employees. So that is something of a bit of a warning sign, an omen of sorts for corporate America that maybe things are going to be quite bleak for the coming quarters.
Right. And yeah, speaking of bleak, I mean, this obviously shows that the corporate belt tightening is extending beyond tech and just media, which is something we've seen in recent weeks. So what does this suggest about the coming year ahead? And does this solidify the idea that a recession is likely next year?
It does really land or reinforce the idea, right? We've seen how the advertising space has been talked about quite a lot. Businesses have been cutting back advertising, and that really hurt the likes of social media platforms like Snap, Twitter, Google, and Meta. Now we've seen it play out in how people are tightening their purse strings, buying less, going for value. And that is starting to hurt many corporate America companies with their expansion plans as well, starting to become more conservative. PepsiCo appears to be potentially one that will pave the way for more companies to be more conservative. And the tricky thing here is, the more we talk about a recession around the corner, it reinforces the idea around how it will happen and becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you just Google the word recession, almost everyone is talking about it. And forecasting is around the corner, and that just makes people more wary and start to save up more, put their money in the bank, which incidentally is seeing interest rates go up. So if you have more people saving and less people spending, it is just a recipe for cutbacks.
All right, thank you for that, Ryan. Now let's take it back home. Back at home, we're currently 17 minutes into the local trading day, and yesterday the Straits Times Index closed higher by 0.26% to end off at 3,267 points. Ryan, how is the SEI performing today?
All right, it is so far in the morning giving back some of those gains, down 0.2% at 3,260. And if you look at where we are for the 30 constituents, pretty much split across the middle. At the top, we've got SATS up 2.1%, followed by Yangzhijiang Shipbuilding down, or rather up 1.4%. And in third place, Frasers Logistics and Commercial Trust up 0.9%. At the bottom, we have Jardine Matheson Holdings down 2.5%, followed by CapitaLand Ascendas REIT down 1.4%, and Mapletree Logistics Trust down 1.2%. Worth noting, it is looking mixed for the banks. DBS is down 1% at 34.14. On the other end of the table, we've got OCBC above water by 0.3%. So it's quite a mixed picture for the Singapore market right now.
Okay, Ryan, now, market view is it's never done without a game of up or down. So if you're hearing us, if you're listening to us, do join in as well. And it's simply where I pick a stock or a topic and you guess whether it's an up or a down. Ryan, are you ready?
Let's go, Dan.
Let's go for the first one, Olam Group.
All right, Olam Agriculture is going to be an up for me. So they have just secured a $2 billion bridge financing facility that will help to support the reorganization plan of its parent, Olam Group. So this is going to pave the way for big changes and hopefully progress for Olam.
All right, then yes, that's going to be an up for me as well for Olam Group. Now let's move on to Trek 2000.
All right, this is a down for me. Yet another down for the thumb drive maker. So the latest is the former CFO, Gurcharan Singh, has been sentenced to 11 months jail and fined $20,000 for falsifying accounts, forgery, and not disclosing interested party transactions. So he is just joining Han Tan and former Poo Teng Pin, a former executive director, Poo Teng Pin, who were also convicted of charges earlier in related conspiracies. So the founder, Han Tan, was sentenced to 16 months jail, while Poo was sentenced to 9 months jail. So they will all be in jail now.
All right. Okay, Ryan, that's going to be a down for me as well for Trek 2000. Let's move on over to our next stock, Union Gas.
Right, Union Gas, I am going with a slight up. So you've got an initiation coverage by DBS Group Research on the stock. So I am going slight up because the call is a hold call. So target price is at 48 cents. And the optimism is around higher than expected margins and dividends, but the share price not attractive enough for a buy yet by DBS.
Do you think you'll be cooking more at home, Ryan?
Possibly more as I try to cut back, so maybe. How about you, Dan?
Likely so, and that's why I'm going to go with up for Union Gas as well. So anyways, let's move on to our last one on the list, and that's floating home loan packages in Singapore.
All right, that's up, and not for a good reason if you're a borrower, because interest rates are going up, as we've seen, and the three-month compounded SORA has crossed 3% for the first time since 2007. So the Singapore overnight rate average, which is pegged to most floating home loan packages in Singapore, has passed the 3% mark for the first time in nearly 15 years. So if you are borrowing, for example, a floating rate package from UOB, you will have to pay likely 3.7% if you're going to be servicing your mortgages for a long time. This is going to be quite painful.
Oh man, that doesn't look good for me as well. I mean, I'm getting my home in a few years' time, so hopefully that changes then. Now, Ryan, let's move on to the last topic of today. Have you done any reflection for this year?
Okay, I have been thinking quite a lot because this is typically a time when you look back and think about the year that's passed and what you've learned. And one of the big lessons I've taken away is how it's important to diversify. And it is really being reinforced by many of the headlines we've been covering, right? And the biggest one has been FTX. How this just came out of the blue for many people and just caught up and took surprise many big name investors, even though they had so much expertise and resources to do due diligence, they also were taken by surprise. So as an investor, I think that is a very important sign that even the so-called smart money can be caught up. You, as a retail investor, really need to diversify because you can't check all the blind spots. Even if you follow the smart money, so to speak, you might also be overexposed if you are not diversified. And in Temasek's case, they also diversified because FTX was just a fraction of the entire portfolio. So it's just a reminder that you need to put your eggs spread out and not just all in one basket. And of course, we get many surprises along the way with the Ukraine war, for example, breaking out and just causing so much disruption in the commodity space. And of course, COVID-19 in China is a big, wild card as well. So surprises galore for this year means it pays to be diversified.
Diversification, that's a big word for today. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.